1:36 to go until halftime. Rebels down 17-0. Here comes the blitz. Oblad's pass on the near side. Caught by Grimes. He breaks a tackle. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. He's in for a touchdown. A Rebel touchdown.
I'd say a lot more confident, you know, just with the games under my belt and getting with the offense, the one reps a lot. So I'd say a lot more confident.
Good morning. Turn my headset up, man. I can't hear myself. What's up? You are listening to Out of Line, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM and 1340 AM, flagship of the Vegas Golden Knights. I'm Brian Feldman. This is Out of Line. We're every Sunday live in the Fox Sports Cardinal Financial Studio in Las Vegas. The We includes co-host Caleb Herring, last UNLV quarterback to lead the Rebels to a bowl game. He was even introduced that way in the locker, I should say in the press box last night. And I saw a little small beam, like I said, the bottle of champagne, not quite opened yet, but could be next week against Colorado State. He says he's not going to open a bottle of champagne.
I won't celebrate this.
The last UNLV quarterback before him, who was the last guy before you to go to a bowl game? Do you know?
Honestly, I have no idea.
Look at that. That just shows you right there.
I think it was Jason Thomas.
It was Jason Thomas.
Who is, believe it or not, thanks to my friend Paul with the stat on the site, the last UNLV quarterback to play all 12 games in a season.
That's insane.
That's terrible. Like 20 years ago.
Honestly, wow. that's a bad thing.
It's a horrible thing. It's not a great moniker to carry. Maybe for him it is. For UNLV,
we went through a bunch of the quarterbacks like Kurt Nankis, Shane Steichen, Rocky Hines.
Yeah.
Like Rocky Hines was supposed to be the savior.
A trivia question, like name the last 12 UNLV quarterbacks. If somebody could get it, they should win a car.
Been like 12?
Johnny Stanton.
They should win a car.
There's been 12 in like the last three years.
Yeah, you know what, Johnny Stanton, let's get into this. But Johnny Stanton, we'll talk about. I mean, the guy was a football player. Maybe not a quarterback, but he was what the definition to me of a football player. That guy would play anything. He was the size of like a large outside linebacker, and he played quarterback. It was kind of fun to watch, but you know, you understood why he transferred away from Nebraska to UNLV when you saw his ability to actually play the quarterback position. Not great. But along with being the color guy for UNLV football on ESPN, the leader, our sister station, Caleb also hosts the Tony Sanchez show with Russ Langer and Steve Cofield's there as well on Wednesday night. So definitely check that out. Also on the leader. And it'll be an interesting show this week. Sanchez has to be a bit down, but we'll talk about that as well. Also here, producer Chris Magnum Chapman, who among other several responsibilities here at Lotus Broadcast Moonlights as the locker room reporter for the Vegas Golden Knights. And we also have our newest team member here, I think third straight week now. Spencer, we're just going to call him the Wiz. The last name, you know, when I say his last name, it reminds me of Dan Orlovsky, the last quarterback of the Detroit Lions, went 0-16. So
don't make him a loser.
Well, that's what I'm trying to do.
The Wiz is on our team.
Let's just put it that way.
Don't associate him with
the Detroit Lions. I'm the only one. Jesus Christ. I'm sorry, Wiz.
Sorry about this.
Listen, the show's also streaming on the LV Sports Network, and you can watch the show on Facebook Live. Thanks to Facebook, man. We got it all over the place. It'll be on my personal page, Caleb's personal page. Well, the Wiz put it on his page, I think, last week. So, yeah, you got a lot of places to see it, and also it'll be on the Out of Line page. And for the spelling of Out of Line, it's simple. It's OUTTALINE, and the show is live, and the phone lines are always open. The Fox Sports Cardinal Financial Studio line, 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
This team is... We're really good. Sometimes we let games slip away. We don't play as good as we do. But, you know, we all have confidence in ourselves that we can win every game. So these last four games aren't, you know, we have the same mentality as we did before.
Yeah, What's on Tap is brought to you by the Cardinal Financial Company, the title sponsor, the first and only choice when looking for answers about home financing. Check out cardinalfinancial.com. On Tap, as you just heard, we'll talk some UNLV football. And that was Kenyon Oblad talking about that he feels confident about the next four games and they'll go out and win them. I think we all might have a little bit differing opinion on that. However, I don't blame Kenyon Oblad for saying that. I think that shows confidence. That's what he's supposed to say. One game at a time, as Tony Sanchez said. It'll start with Colorado State next week. It is a tough road to haul. We'll see what they can do. We'll talk a lot about that. We'll also talk about the Vegas Golden Knights, who on Friday night lost to the Colorado Avalanche. And I said last week, with Colorado being at this point in time looking like the best team in the NHL, a very cohesive group, getting some great goaltending. And I said, you know, this is going to be kind of the thermometer for where the Vegas Golden Knights are right now. And where they are right now, they lost 6-1. And you might say, wow, six goals given up. Fleury did give up four of those goals, but believe me, probably 9 out of 10 goalies in the NHL, the score is 9-0 or 9-1 after the first period. I mean, Fleury was pelted. Some horrible giveaways by the Golden Knights, some bad transitional hockey, horrible play in the neutral zone. And as a matter of fact, for part of that game, and when we get into nightcap, I'm sure, Chris, you'll agree with me on this, that the Vegas Golden Knights really looked like for a while they were skating in wet cements. It's as bad as I've seen them play. Some of the most errant and lethargic passes I've seen them make all year. And you know what? I think Gerard Gallant, will talk about this, was as subdued as I've seen him in a press conference after a loss. He really knows there's just got to be some change, and this team has to play with more of a sense of urgency. They're beating teams they should beat for the most part, but when you see the top tier and the top rung of hockey, that would be Colorado. They are definitely, to say the least, a step behind that team, and we'll talk about that as well. We've also got UNLV basketball to talk about. They played their first exhibition game on Friday night. I didn't get a chance to go out there, but from what I understand, it was men playing among boys, almost literally. The tallest guy for the team they played was like 6'1". I mean, you know, Caleb, I think you would have lit him up for 25 or 30 points.
I'd do it any given night.
It would happen regardless.
Yeah, college basketball. Well, I'm a baller.
This was a D1 team playing a D3 team is what it looked like, and from what I understood, I don't think it's indicative of what we'll see of UNLV all season. However, it's a good start for Coach TJ Otzelberger, and we'll see what happens going forward with them. We'll talk about that. We have S&B with C, the Raiders, after winning two straight, getting a bye week, you thought they'd be ready. The Packers defense, as I said, since the beginning of the season, is the most improved defense in the National Football League, and the Raiders found that out last Sunday. The record's now 3-3. Caleb will talk about that. We've got week 7 conversation along with week 8 now that the NFL approaches the halfway mark of the season, and what teams are rising to the top, what teams aren't, house of cards, teams that we expect to make a push in the second half. We'll talk about that. We've got our pick segment in studio. Last week we went 5-5. Me and Mags take another loss. The Wiz actually keeps the guests at 500, which is our best record amongst us all, which is pretty bad. But the biggest news of the week, Caleb Herrig off the shelf, trying to tank, he wins. Maybe that's
I think it should be, there should be extra points given to the fashion in which I won, because nobody would have picked the game I picked, and then I only won it by half a point. So
then I mean, then you took the underdog.
The risk reward there is, I think, worth two wins, and I'm going to stand by that.
It's hard when you pick bad teams. I mean, the Wiz picked a bad team too. You guys win with bad teams. Although Mags did take his crosstown rival, the Giants, and got kicked in the balls as well in that game. I mean, just wasn't a good look for the Giants at all. Arizona Cardinals, Kyler Murray looking like a superstar against the Giants, as he did in the fourth quarter against the Lions in Game 1. He does show all kinds of flashes of potential, and I think when you look at the Oklahoma quarterbacks that have won the Heisman, and we might see a third one this year, although Jalen Hurts put a hurt on that. I think he let Ohio State's quarterback kind of get behind him after this past game. However, I think the best of the Oklahoma quarterbacks over the past 3 years with the Heisman looks like it is going to be Kyler Murray. I think he shows the most upside. And being that it's his first season and how small he is, he really does seem to make some good decisions. We'll talk about that during the NFL pick segments and when we talk about the NFL this week. That is What's on Tap. Don't forget, if you are looking to buy or refi, the Cardinal Financial Company should be your first choice. Check out cardinalfinancial.com today. And that's What's on Tap.
This. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
Yeah, it's a fact. Aside from some drops and special team blunders, UNLV played one of their best games of the season against San Diego State, but still lost. This means that the Rebels must win the remaining four games to go 500 and become bowl eligible. Caleb, straight up, if UNLV doesn't win their four remaining games?
Why are you going to ask me this?
No, I'm just saying, what do you think? I mean, I'm going to tell you, you know what I'm going to say to you right now? If they would have won last night and won two more games and they would have ended up with five wins, I would have been really lobbying for Tony Sanchez to keep his job. Seriously, yeah. I thought the second half last night was the best second half adjustments I have seen this guy make in his entire coaching career as far as the collegiate level at UNLV goes. I was impressed. I saw some wrinkles. I saw them do a few different things. And for the first time, I couldn't even call all the plays based on the formations, and that's not too bad considering I'm not a coach and never have been at the as a football coach. So I'll say that. And secondly, I will say that I jinxed UNLV last night, and I don't want you to hit me because I'm sitting close to you. I told Mags about it right after the game. One of our friends on another station was standing right next to me and walked away saying, "Oh my God," after it happened, because I told him as we were walking past Gutierrez when UNLV got the ball back to drive down for the final thing. I go to my friend. I go, "You see that guy right there? He's going to doink one off the goalpost to lose the game for UNLV." I swear to God, I said that. And when he did it, when he lined up for the field goal, Caleb, I turned around, and then I felt all of a sudden this breeze come out of nowhere. And I'm like, oh, my God, it's going to happen.
You're a bad omen.
Is that ridiculous or what?
You are a bad omen. You are a terrible person for that. And you should feel ashamed of yourself. I'm not going to assault you because I can go to jail.
I did feel bad when it happened. Like, why did I even let it out of my mouth,
yeah,
even though
that's
I thought
terrible.
It?
That's terrible. That's awful. Yeah. Anyway, but
poor,
no,
Daniel, I made the guy cry by a bad prediction.
Anyway, I don't think, okay, so there's two ways to answer this question. There's my personal opinion on what I think should happen, and that I think is what I always go with, and everybody can come after me for it if they want to. But my personal opinion is that, number one, I think UNLV can win if UNLV plays their best brand of football. They can win four straight games. I'm not against the rest of the teams on the schedule. There's nobody remaining. Maybe Hawaii, that scares me, but Hawaii in Sam Boyd has been something that we've been able to do for the past five seasons at UNLV. So if I'm looking at it that way, the last four games on the schedule, winning all four of them in a row doesn't seem like that daunting of a task, just with the last remaining teams. You got Colorado State, San Jose, Hawaii, and Reno, which is by no means an insurmountable task. So that's number one. I think they can win out. Number two, if they play their best. And that, when I say things like that, it's because I judge them based on what they can be and what is their best. And UNLV has this season only been at their best for one game, and that was against Vanderbilt. And so if they play the way that they played against Vanderbilt, which isn't about being explosive or doing anything crazy, it's just playing clean football.
60 minutes of football is what it is.
That's all they have to do. And if I judge them based on being able to do that, everything else is a variable. And if they don't control the variables, then, of course, they'll lose. And that's what they've done more often than not this season. But in regards to the season being lost and, I guess, Tony and the coaching staff and all that stuff, in my opinion, I think this season, the results of it, I don't think should determine Sanchez's job. And it's not because of Sanchez. It's because of what my personal opinions are about program building. And I think in this day and age
how many
in college
years
football,
do you give him, Caleb? Seriously, how many years do you give
listen,
him?
Listen, it's not...
Not, I'm not saying him in particular. I'm saying a coach, when you hire him at a university, what do you feel comfortable saying, this coach? Because, you know, Chris made a point yesterday on the field, and Chris, you said this to me, and I really echoed your sentiments. You said, you know, it's funny, Tony Sanchez was winning with Bobby Houck's players, but he can't win with his own.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, the best team he's had, at least in terms of production, was that first year. And it seems like every year since,
backwards.
Well, I don't
Although
know.
Although they're winning more games.
I don't want to say backwards.
Every year since, they've
He's
had
improved.
A different quarterback.
Well, that's a problem.
But
I think you also.
Who does that fall on?
You look at the fact that.
Injuries?
They can't go forward. They're stuck
hurt?
In neutral.
He's been hurt every season.
Right? Like Bobby Houck's last team was garbage, right? You know, they stunk. And Sanchez comes in, they went five games that first year.
They probably played their weakest schedule too, but
and
yeah.
they beat Reno, and you're like, all right, you know what? This is gonna be his worst team. And since then, and I'm one of those guys who will also say, I'll give him credit, because he hasn't had a two-win season.
No.
Right? Like every year they've been in that 5-6 win, but at some point you have to get better. You have to take that step forward. And
And I don't even,
I just don't
did
know.
Did Nash just shake him by saying he's never had a two-win season
there's
before?
There's so much that...
Yeah, right, well, I mean... let's not go there.
There's so much more that goes... Like, program building is not always just about what you're doing.
Well, there's stability,
it's about what other
right?
programs are doing, too. Like, sometimes you're just not at the top of the pool. And sometimes the wins aren't going to be there because, like, for the instance, this season, this is probably the toughest schedule that he's played.
He has had it, but... And it's here's the problem, Caleb. I look at San Jose State. They have four wins. They went to West Point yesterday and beat a pretty good Army team. Wyoming, already bowl eligible with six wins. You mean to tell me that those teams have more talent than UNLV? Or is it coaching?
No, I just think it's consistency in coaching.
I'll give you that.
The coaching turnaround, for one, there's too much turnaround at UNLV. For a school like UNLV, there shouldn't be this much. So you look at the most successful programs. They have tenured coaches that have been there forever, and they're successful because of that, because they've instilled the program, they've built around that program. You've got instability and injuries. Armani Rogers is the number one guy. He has been for the past 3 years. He's been hurt each of the last three seasons, and there's been extended periods of time where he's not there. Your whole offensive game plan changes based on who's at quarterback.
They deserve credit for the fact that they've had to make a complete change at the quarterback position, and not just two different guys. I mean, two different systems.
Guys, wait a minute. You know,
here's my point, though.
Also, another Barney Cotton, the
offensive coordinator right,
who
just had a heart transplant.
Had a heart transplant and was a sudden leave of absence in July. And so you had to put together a new offensive scheme based around a new offensive coordinator.
I'll give you that
could contribute to some of the inconsistencies that we see with the
offense.
There's a lot of things. And I just don't know that a coaching change is the problem
that solves wins and losses.
I don't think that's the thing.
And this is obviously a big hypothetical, but unless Jim Harbaugh becomes available and you have the and you're going to pony up the money to go get a Jim Harbaugh.
Exactly.
I mean,
realistically,
I don't want to see Tony Sanchez fired and replaced with some coordinator from San Jose State.
No.
Or the hot coordinator from Notre Dame or Ohio State. I want, if they're going to fire Tony Sanchez, I want them to bring in someone who has a proven track record of turning programs around.
Right.
Hey, you know what? If Dirk Cotter gets fired from the Falcons, and you can go get Dirk Cotter, or I'm sorry, the Buccaneers, you go get Dirk Cotter. Right?
I'm not going to disagree. I just don't know if $200,000 a year is going to entice him.
Right? You're going into this new stadium next year.
Exactly.
You've got this brand new facility thanks to Tony Sanchez.
And that's what I'm saying.
Right? You don't have that facility without him.
There's so much more that goes into this decision to me than wins and losses at UNLV.
Guys, I'm not disagreeing with you. But
this isn't a Marvin Menzies situation.
It's not, but still. It's a results-driven thing. Caleb said one thing.
When you look at what Tony Sanchez took over, he took over arguably the worst program in the Mountain West.
He took over a bad program, Chris, but a program that was a year removed from a bowl game.
That they wouldn't have made if not for a quarterback change.
I understand that, but that's to a degree, as bad as that sounds.
Well, his hand was forced in that Central Michigan game.
It was forced, but the bottom line is he had the wherewithal to have Caleb Herring as the backup to Nick Sherry. He did, and he could have easily. He didn't like Caleb. Caleb didn't like him. We know that.
Yes.
But still, he kept him in that position. Because deep down he knew he was the best option there. And luckily for him, Sherry played so bad in the Central Michigan game that they brought the kid in and it changed their damn season.
The reality is he never should have been given that extension to begin with.
No, I agree. But my point is right now, Caleb said the inconsistency, the coaching has been inconsistent. It has, and that's my problem. That play down at the goal line, I was standing right there. It was putrid. And then you waste a timeout after two false start penalties. Come on, man.
The false start penalties weren't the reason for the timeout. It was because there was an illegal substitution.
I understand that. There was a 12.
Because that would have been another penalty that would have backed
Tell me something,
further.
Caleb. Is it only in the pros, 12 men in the huddle? Because there were 12 men in the huddle, but they don't call that in college.
It's an illegal substitution because there's a substitution and the person didn't leave the huddle before breaking it. So he called the timeout, realizing it before the officials did.
The officials almost called the penalty.
That's the thing. That's why the timeout.
But I'm saying that's coaching.
See,
confusion.
Now, I'm gonna take the opposite side of this, though. You are on the 1.5 yard line. Is burning the timeout worth losing half a yard at that point? No, I don't think so.
That's the point.
I think you take the penalty, you lose the half a yard, Because in the grand scheme of things,
they still got the damn punt block, so it didn't matter.
They didn't get the punt block there. They actually got out.
That's right. They got out. You're right.
The next play after the timeout, after he got his team together and settled them down on the sideline, and complete a 20-yard pass for first down.
That was the big play.
The timeout did what it was supposed to do. It's just that the result of it means you didn't have any timeouts, and it honestly didn't come back to haunt them because with 3 minutes and 44 seconds left, they had the ball and didn't need a timeout.
But Caleb, come on, they didn't have them if they needed them. It worked out where. Yes, granted, they didn't really affect the outcome of the game at the end, but you can't burn timeouts in the second half by being unorganized. They burned two on that possession. I know.
They had 3 false start penalties on that possession, burned 2 timeouts, had, I think, 3 drop passes.
Yeah.
And then they ended up punting the ball from midfield.
Here's what I'm going to say right now. I'm not going to disagree, Caleb, that all 4 of these games, based on the way they've played and some of the things they do, are winnable. I'm going to say that they are winnable. But I'm going to say it's going to be a hell of a task. And if they did win these 4 games, hell yes, you give him an extension. You give an extension, you don't just buy him 1 more year. That'd be a hell of an accomplishment win out after the way they've started, and especially after a heartbreaking loss to San Diego State. Because right now, this next game is so pivotal in so many ways, because you lose like that, and there's 2 ways you go. You either say, man, look at how good we played, and let's feed off of that, and a doink changes potentially the outcome of this game.
You know, I'm going a step further.
But can't they go the other way too, Caleb, where you're just like, oh my God, we're a snake bit team. This is just going
to
keep.
That's fine. You can go that way if you want to. And if you decide to have a coaching change, I'm fine with that 100%. If anybody out there wants that, show me who by track record.
I'm
you
not
think UNLV is going to hire?
I think
show me who UNLV is going
to
pay.
And you're going to lose Fertitta money.
If he
wins 3 or 4, I think you bring him back. I don't care. If they go 5-7, you bring him back.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
You know what?
If you're going to make a coach
because
change,
you know what?
show me who and show me how.
I want to see who you're going to bring in.
Here's what I'll tell you. I'll not disagree with you unless that one loss is to Reno. If that one loss is to Reno,
I think if you
that
lose,
might hurt
you. Lose at Reno with finishing 500 on the line, I think that's a tough call.
It's a tough call, and we're going to see.
But Reno stinks right now.
Yeah. I'm not saying we shouldn't bring him back. I am saying next year is like beyond probation. If you go under 500 this year and retain employment, and you get the new stadium, the opportunity to recruit with the new stadium, and you lay an egg next year in the new stadium, I am sorry. I'm not going to have this discussion again this year. I hope everyone's on the other side. I don't want it to be. I like Tony Sanchez as a person. I also like him as a football coach. I really do. But I think you've got to figure out a way to coach more consistently, Caleb. And whatever that means, it has to happen, because we see these inconsistencies throughout the game. We see like a bad quarter. And really yesterday, a bad quarter, that second quarter, ultimately cost them the football game. You can't have bad lapses in games. You might have a bad drive, but you can't have these bad lapses. And especially you can't have second half adjustments up until yesterday's game.
Watching the game, I don't even think it was a bad quarter of football. I think it
was. Well, they got lucky and scored the late touchdown. Otherwise, it would have been terrible.
Outside of the blocked punt, which was one play, looking at that game, it wasn't a bad game. Like it was a back and forth game. They forced a lot of punts. They stopped San Diego State a lot. Outside of that the blocked field goal. Or the block punt, they only gave up 10 points.
No, you're
defensively.
Right.
It was a good game back and forth outside of a couple of plays. It wasn't like there was just a lull completely. Going 3-and-out as an offense isn't the end of the world. Having a bad series and not ending in points isn't the end of the world in a game of football. You can do that and still win games. Yeah. San Diego State went 3-and-out. We're not sitting here saying they had a bad game. They played football. That's a part of the game. Going 3-and-out, getting stopped sometimes is a part of the game.
Defensively,
they didn't turn the ball over.
Defensively, UNLV played their best game that I've seen this season. I thought they played defensively extremely well.
It was up there. It was up there. And like I said, it was against San Diego State. It's a matchup that works, because there's not a lot of trick plays. There's not a lot of eye candy with San Diego State.
Yeah,
it is what it is.
X's and O's football.
Yeah, they come at you and they do what they do. So I knew defensively they could stand their ground, and guys like Rayshon Jackson really thrive in that situation. Man. But I don't think that that game was a bad game. It's just a game that they lost. If they make that field goal and go win it in overtime, you look back at that stat and it looks a lot different through that lens. But looking at it, it was a well-played game. They outrushed San Diego State. They had more total yards of offense in San Diego State. They had just as many first downs. They converted more third downs, not a higher percentage, but more third downs. They converted way more fourth downs, 3 or 4, 75%. They were in the game. It was a good game for UNLV, like the totality of it. There was just a couple of plays that really changed the outcome, and the block punt being the biggest one, and then Noah Bean not getting that half yard to keep that drive alive, having to settle for a field goal out of halftime.
That was a killer.
Those are the two main plays that really hurt UNLV. There.
I'm not going to disagree, and we'll end this conversation on this, and I do want to play the Charles Williams interview before we go to break, but I will end on this. You know, it was a good game, but you used a good thing. You said if. And if ifs and buts were candy and nuts, every day would be Christmas. Listen, I talked to Charles Williams after the game about his performance, about this team. I enjoy the positivity of, you know, looking forward one game at a time and all that stuff. But they're going to need more of Charles Williams, who did pick up some key first downs yesterday, had some key runs like he always did. But you need more than him. But this was Chuck after the game. And we'll hit a break after this. When we come back, we'll have Nightcap.
How do you just recover for this one? Because, you know, it's on to the next game.
Just go back, look at what you got to work on, and figure out what happened to where we didn't get the win, and just prepare better and execute and just get on top, and we keep rolling after next week. We just got to stay. We got to put this to bed and then worry about next week and then get rolling.
How do you – a lot of tonight, it's like you seem to have a grasp on the game, and there were just mistakes, a few turnovers and stuff like that. But on the sidelines, is it pumping each other up? What do you say to each other when to overcome mistake after mistake? Because you did it to stay right in this game.
Just had the same attitude you had coming out and, you know, just relax. The game's not over. There's still a lot of time left, and we got to just continue to keep firing and keep attacking them and just finish strong.
Kenyon Oblad, freshman, getting a heck of an opportunity, but also we're watching him grow up right in front of our eyes. Mm-hmm. What do you think of his play, and is he a guy that can go a full 60-minute game?
Yes, I believe so. He's able to do what we're asking him to do. He's capable of doing everything, and he's a solid kid, has his head right, and he knows he's trying to do his best, and we got to help him out, and we got to execute. We got to take the pressure off him, and he's going to take the pressure off me. He's going to take the pressure off the line. We got to just take the pressure off each other, basically. You know, open everything up for everybody. We're going to spread the ball around. So, yeah.
Coach said in the press conference, 6 wins to get a bowl game. That means you got to win out. I know it's one game at a time, but is that your focus? You guys still determined to win the following couple games and get into a bowl?
Colorado State is the only priority right now, so that's all we got to worry about is Colorado State. See what they're doing and, you know, bounce back and just keep executing and keep being explosive.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
Yeah, it is time for Nightcap, Cup of the Vegas Golden Knights. And Chris, I wonder how much 7 games in 11 days affects a hockey team. I know they play 82 games, and it is a grinding schedule. They're very used to it. They play their exhibition season. But 7 games in 11 days is a lot of hockey, and I think Friday night it finally reared its ugly head, because this team really was lethargic from the get-go. They give up a goal. It was really cool to see Belmar get that early goal and get his revenge, and he was the second star. He also got an assist in the game.
Two assists.
That part was cool, but the part that wasn't cool was, number one, how we gave up that goal. Mark Stone, a pass that this guy just doesn't make, a lackadaisical pass like he did. And they hung out. They hung Marc-Andre Fleury out to dry a number of times in that game, to the point that Gerard Gallant had to yank him simply to save him, and even said that it had nothing to do with his play. Because in my opinion, believe it or not, in that game, Marc-Andre Fleury should have been one of the three stars, even though he only played a little over half that hockey game. It is amazing some of the quality saves he made on a couple of breakaways in that game. And that is completely lost in a 6-1 defeat to what I'm saying might be the best team in hockey right now.
Well, Colorado's certainly playing like it. I mean, but they got smoked last night.
They did
against Anaheim.
A team we're playing today.
Tonight. But, you know, the thing about Friday is you kind of saw this coming, right? Like, they have been giving up lots of shots. They were kind of lucky to beat Chicago the game before. Nick Holden scores with the sixth. They were losing 1-0, and Nick Holden scores with a minute and 20-something to go in the game a 6-on-5 advantage. They pulled the goalie. You know, they were smoked in Philadelphia. They only really scored the one goal in Pittsburgh. Granted, Fleury got the shutout, and they end up winning 3-0, but two empty net goals there. They struggled to put the puck in the net against Ottawa. You're seeing a team that, A, misses Nate Schmidt, but I'm not sure how much Nate Schmidt masks or fixes the problems that they have moving the puck out of the defensive zone, because they are struggling to do that. They're giving up lots of chances to their opponents. And, I mean, Colorado, they just skated circles around these guys. I mean, it wasn't even competitive. Like, Colorado probably could have put up 6 or 7 goals. I mean, they did put up 6. I'm saying they probably could have put up 2 or 3 more. I mean, it was pretty ridiculous to see that. And I'm not sure I've ever seen a Golden Knights team play like that. I'm not buying the 7 games in 11 days. It's early in the season. You know, I think the problem, though, is their lack of depth scoring.
Well, you're going to hear in a minute, Mark Stone thought the 7
games. No, Max Pacioretty.
No, I'm talking about Mark Stone felt that the 7 games in 11 days was a lot, and he's looking forward to 2 games in 8 days, thinking that will give them just a little bit of breather, a chance to catch their feet. They have played a lot of hockey. They've logged a lot of ice time, but that is the rigmarole of the NHL, and a lot of teams go through stretches like that. So you're right, Chris. It's not an excuse.
Well, yeah, Colorado had just spent a week on the road. I think they played like 5 straight road games. So
rigmarole?
Rigmarole, yeah.
I don't even know what that is.
Check it out. Look at Google.
I have to fact check that. Okay.
Okay, rigmarole. Yeah, but anyways, I love that. I'll tell you something. With the glaring thing to me, guys, watching this team, is Marc-Andre Fleury. We are realizing, Chris, that I don't think any of these backup goaltenders, maybe Malcolm Subban if he played every night, but from what I'm seeing, if Marc-Andre Fleury went away, this is a completely different hockey team. As good as some of the guys he has playing in front of them are, they're not playing well together right now. And that last line of defense, number 29, is exceptional, even pushing 38 years old. And I'm just wondering, what are they going to do, man? Because the guys we've seen behind him come in, like that last goal given up in Friday night, was putrid, Chris. Jake Bischoff definitely played terrible. I'm not going to say this guy. I'll be surprised if we see him suiting up anytime again soon, as bad as he played. But aside from him, we are really hurting when you get beyond Marc-Andre Fleury as far as a netminder goes. And I don't know what they're going
to
do.
Well, I think what they need to hope for is that Malcolm Subban comes back and that Garrett Sparks puts that goofy goal that he gave up at the end behind him. And, you know, again, it goes back to not only lack of depth scoring, but lack of depth in general. I mean, they traded away Eric Branstrom to get Mark Stone. That's fine. They traded away Nick Suzuki and Tomas Tatar to get Max Pacioretty. But when you look up what they gave up to get Tomas Tatar, you're like, well, wait a minute. Now they gave up even more to get Max Pacioretty. And there's some people who think, well, you would have gotten the same thing out of Tomas Tatar that you've gotten out of Max Pacioretty as far as goals. Now, I don't know. I mean, to me, that's debatable. But there's definitely something not quite there. Your best defensive pairing has been Nick Holden and John Merrill.
Yeah.
And those are two guys who are defensive defensemen.
Amazing,
right?
How much ice time Merrill's logging now.
Yeah. And John Merrill's played really well. Yeah. I mean, I think we're going to see, he's in the last year of his contract, and I do believe that they will extend John Merrill midseason.
One of my favorite players for the Golden Knights.
And you know what? He's a very likable guy.
He is. He's a good. Plus, he's a Michigan guy.
Yeah, I know. I knew you were going to say that. But, you know, I just think, we'll see when Nate Schmidt and Alex Tuch both return to the lineup, how much of a difference that has. I mean, I think it's going to make some difference, but I don't know if those two guys in the lineup make anything different than what happened against Colorado. Maybe they don't lose 6-1, but Colorado, Nashville, Boston have come into this building and blown the doors off this team.
Yeah, they have. And that's something that is going to have to change. They're going to shore up things. And I think you may see Gerard Gallant in the next week mixing things up as far as line changes go and seeing if he can't generate some more offense out of his lower lines. They look fine, and when they play well together, they're great. Carlson scored a beautiful goal with a pass from Riley Smith in the last game, but that's the only goal they got, and they're going to need a lot more of that. Listen, let's take our last break. We'll come back. We've got Blazin'. We'll whip through SB&C. NFL week, and we'll try to get a little bit of UNLV basketball in. You are listening to Fox Sports Radio. This is Out of Line. I'm Brian Feldman here with Caleb Herring, Chris Magnum Chapman, and, of course, our intern, The Wiz, on Facebook Live. We'll be right back. It is time for Blazin', brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, North Durango, and the 215 in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. Two happy hours every day, America's favorite place for wings, beer, and sports. And we're there every Monday night to check out Monday Night Football, the greatest Monday Night Football parties. And also this year, all over town doing Vegas Golden Knights watch parties. The next one will be at the Montecito Crossing Plaza. That will be November 13th against the Chicago Blackhawks. And we will be giving away some tickets, lower bowl tickets, to Vegas Golden Knights game. Put it on your schedule and come on out and join us. Blazin', man, I'll start this off. You know, I don't know if you guys saw, I haven't been paying much attention, it's the end of the season with golf and stuff, but Tiger Woods, man, is on his way to he's never lost a tournament where he's held a three-stroke lead going into Sunday. He's holding a three-stroke lead right now in Japan, where, by the way, there was a typhoon yesterday and he played through it. But that's Tiger Woods golf, man.
He's on
scrambling
the prowl.
Golf. He is on the prowl. He is three strokes up. It is the Zozo Championship in Japan. He's minus 16, shot a 66, 400 yesterday. He's three strokes ahead of Hideki Matsui. Matsuyama. I don't know how he was.
Matsuyama.
Yeah. He's 13 under, 65 yesterday, had a great round. And Gary Woodland's minus 12 at 68. But if Tiger Wynn wins this tournament, he will tie Sam Snead for the all-time wins on the PGA 82? Tour, 82 wins.
Yeah.
And you got to take your hats off to Tiger Woods to come back, have that kind of layoff, win the Masters last year, winning again, getting himself primed for 2020. And I don't know that he'll catch Jack, but come on, man. To play with the kind of torque that that guy swings with, to come back from that back injury and be winning tournaments again, I don't care what you think of Tiger Woods personally or what happened before, you have got to take your hats off to this guy. That is an incredible accomplishment at his age, especially with guys like Brooks Koepka on tour right now. For him to win any tournament, hats off to the guy, man.
The GOAT. The greatest of all time.
I agree with you 100%.
No, no,
and one of the most iconic athletes of
100%.
All time. 100%.
Influential athletes of a generation.
We agree Tiger on something. Woods. That scares me. Well, who do you got, Caleb?
Alex Bregman. I mean, the World Series is going to be what we always want it to be. I'm want to just scream Game 7 because all things indicate that they will be going down to a Game 7 best of three series now. But Alex Bregman's blew the game open last night with the grand slam, and the mic drop was impeccable. It was beautiful the way he, you know, watched that ball sail over the fence and dropped the bat like that. Didn't do a flip, but he just kind of dropped it.
He admired it.
No, yeah, he's a true gamer, and he in the World Series that they won a couple years back, he definitely had his mark on it, and he's doing it again. So he's blazing around, hitting a grand slam in the World Series is probably one of the biggest things. Biggest accomplishments you could do as
and on the road and in a monster game that you almost must win.
So
and I agree.
So that's it to me. Alex Bregman specifically, but the World Series in general looks like it's going to be a good one going Game 7. So that's my prediction. But
he's a postseason player, and I want to tell you that this is the third time, check this out, that the road team has won the first four games of a World Series in the last 90 years. In 1986, the Boston Red Sox won Games 1 and 2 in Queens before the Mets turned around and won Games 3 and 4 at Fenway Park. And, of course, you remember the famous World Series with Bill Buckner, and the Mets came back and won that. And in 1996, the Braves won the first two games at Yankee Stadium and then didn't win the rest of the way because the first and only team to lose six games after winning the first teams on the road. Could this be Washington's fate?
Yes, I think it will be. I think Astros win the next
Houston's
two.
Houston's here now. They showed. They definitely showed up and showed up. I hope it goes to Game 7, but I think Houston finally woke up.
The Astros, you got to look at it. The Astros, I should say the Nationals beat Cole and Verlander in Houston, which you think when that happens, the Nationals are going to do this and put Washington over, and then Washington goes home, and the Astros beat them two straight. Houston is one of the most resilient baseball teams I've seen in a while. Some great superstars like the ALCS MVP, Jose Altuve, who's so much funny to watch. And just really cool. Chris, give me your blazing.
All right, I'll make it quick. You know I love my soccer. March 4th, 1995, Peter Schmeichel was in goal for Manchester United. They beat Ipswich Town 9-0 at the time. That was the largest win ever in Premier League history. On Friday, it was matched. Leicester City defeated Southampton by a score of 9-0 on the road. In goal for Leicester City, Kasper Schmeichel, the son of Peter Schmeichel.
I just love the name.
I was going to say, do you know Peter Schmeichel, was in line. If Caleb would have failed in that season, Peter Schmeichel was going to be
Peter Schmeichel.
He was the third string quarterback on UNLV that year. Peter Schmeichel and his son or father, whatever. Great, great name, Peter Schmeichel. I like it.
Everything that is very good is going to be called Schmeichel from now on. You Schmeicheled that.
The Wiz, Schmeichel the Wiz. hey, listen, the Blazing is brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 North Durango, Montecito Crossing Plaza, two happy hours every day, America's favorite place for wings, beer, and sports. We're there every Monday for Monday Night Football, and again, Vegas Golden Knights watch parties. Real quick, Caleb, we are flying tonight. S&B with C, it's all about the silver and black. They get two big wins in a row. It looks like they've turned the corner. They get a bye week. You think time to rejuvenate. They play Green Bay, one of the best defenses, and they laid an egg to the point that I think the Wiz is even going to pick against them this week.
Yeah, so they, like we said before, they hit a tough stretch in the schedule after that bye week. I mean, the bye week was great and all, but you come back and play the Packers, who did what the Packers are probably going to do. They're probably going to win the NFC this year, the way they've been playing. But then you don't get any breaks when you come play Houston. So Deshaun Watson, Coach Gruden is a fan of Deshaun, and he's been, I guess, criticized for being too much of a fanboy of Deshaun Watson. And then also Josh Jacobs, Trent Brown, and Terrell Williams were all questionable all week and didn't practice much during the week. So those are some key players that you're going to be missing. The only three guys that are mentioned on the injury report as questionable, but those are pretty big three names that could be out of action or at least see limited time due to some nagging injuries. But it's going to be another tough week for the Raiders, I think. And Houston's one of those hungry teams in the AFC with some young talent with Hopkins and Deshaun Watson that are going to give the defense nightmares. There's not anybody on the Raiders secondary that can cover Hopkins one-on-one. And I think that's definitely going to be the story where Houston's going to light it up a little bit offensively.
The sad part is the Raiders in Houston is one of the best matchups of the weekend. I mean, you got the Packers and the Chiefs, but that's a little watered down without Mahomes. The Browns and the Patriots, the Browns haven't been who we thought they were, so that might be the game of the week to watch. I'll take it. Listen, guys, let's fly into the NFL. What we're seeing going on so far, we've got our pick segment coming up, and looking at the NFL right now the way it is, I think I said earlier on, man, the Packers in that best defense, watch out for this team.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, to me, it just looks like New England and Green Bay's on a collision course.
Finally, we get what we've all been wanting.
Oh, God almighty.
Brady versus Rodgers.
Again. Well, no, it's not again.
It's never been
Favre,
in the Super Bowl.
Favre, it was Favre and Brady the first time around. So you're right. It'll be interesting. Two of the best quarterbacks in the game and maybe in history playing in the Super Bowl, but I don't want to see it. I'm sorry. Listen, guys, let's get to the pick segment. Wiz, we haven't heard from you all day, so we're going to let you kick this off. And I think you're going against the future team of Las Vegas, the Raiders, man. You just don't like them. You like Deshaun Watson. You like Houston.
Just let him say it.
He's going to say it. Watch.
The Raiders just traded Gannon Conley for a third-round pick to the Texans, mind you. So that means either Trayvon Mullen or the kid from Houston who's coming off IR, a rookie, is going to be guarding DeAndre Hopkins or Darren Worley, who is maybe the worst back in all of the football. So when Deshaun Watson gets tired of throwing it to DeAndre Hopkins because his arm gets tired, he'll just throw it to Will Fuller, and it'll just be a bunch of 20-yard touchdowns. It's going to be the worst game of the week, I predict. So
the Texans are going to be 5-3, what he says, and maybe that's a team to watch in the AFC. Chris?
Well, I think everyone's overreacting to the game that Sam Darnold played on Monday night.
Ghosts.
He played
one of
the best games you've seen a quarterback play this season against the Cowboys. He followed it up with a stinker against the best defense in the NFL. Line opened at 4. I see it up to 6.5, 7 in some places. I'm taking the Jets on the road, getting the points against Jacksonville. Jacksonville, who have they beaten to get the respect to be a 7-point favorite?
I'm not. Well, they're a 6-point favorite. You only have to give up 6, or you're only getting 6 with the Jets. Right. I think it's a very bold statement.
I think the Jets win the game outright.
They could. He has no faith in Minshew.
No, I have. Fear the stash.
Okay.
Fear the stash.
Fear the stash. What you got for me?
I'm going with the Niners over the Panthers. I bet against the Niners last week because I figured they were a hot team that was due for a struggle game, and that kind of game usually wakes you up. They only scored, 9 points in a win, 9-0, one of the ugliest games on the stat sheet So, yeah, it was pretty bad. So I'm saying at home against the Panthers with 4.5, I think, is the line right now, 4.5. So I think the Niners get a redemption week in a big way, and they come out and show that they are worth being undefeated, and they're really a contender in the NFC.
Well, I'm going to be the hangover. I'm going with the hair of the dog that bit me last week. The Lions always bite me in the ass, and they're going again. They're giving up 6 to the lowly New York Giants, and I'm saying the Lions are going to cover the spread.
Hopeless.
That's it.
Romantic.
We are out of time for Chris Magnum Chapman, my co-host Caleb Herring, our intern, the Mighty Wiz. I threw the word mighty in there. This is Out of Line. We are here every Friday. I should say every Monday from 8 to 9, Fox Sports Radio.
You mean Sunday.
Sunday.
He's learning his days of the week.
Yeah, said Monday, then Friday. My goodness, man.
We'll be here next Sunday, I think, 8 to 9, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. This is Out of Line. I'm Brian Feldman. We appreciate you listening. We're out. See ya.